Well, the Collective Cast is the official podcast of the Reform Collective. Views expressed by the hosts and guests do not necessarily represent or the Collective as a whole.
The gospel is the power of God for salvation. God foreknows, predestines, calls, justifies, glorifies, but he will not lose them. That's the promise.
No Christian should walk with a judgmental swagger because we did not work out our own salvation. It was given by a God of compassion and mercy.
Hey, I'd like to welcome everybody to our show tonight. Go ahead and get your Bibles out. Get ready to flip through the passages. But let me tell you a little bit about the show. This is Reform Collective, the biblical perspectives. This show is necessary because folks have gotten reckless.
Reaching with agendas,
twisting scriptures, ignoring the glory that we find in Christ's redemption.
Bad doctrine, we refute it. We'll exegete the text with the proper hermeneutic. Systematic context, truth and love, that's how we do it. And now to Josh and Jason.
Yeah.
Welcome to the modern Reformation.
We need to deliver ourselves from the bondage of prayerless praying and learn to take up, as the Reformers and Puritans did, their mantle of prayer and dependency on the Holy Spirit, and storm the mercy seat and take the kingdom of heaven by violence, for the violent take it by force.
Study with my hands.
Welcome to the Collective Cast. I'm Jason, and I'm here with David Appelt, however you want to say it. This is the fourth time that him and I are recording, but it's only the second time that you're hearing it.
That's true.
Because the first time that we were supposed to do it, literally, like, it didn't happen. And then
that was with Josh as well.
And then it was with Josh when I was still here in Texas. And then I went to visit him in Kansas City, and we recorded, and it was real fun because Josh and I were a little tipsy, and it was probably the best. It was probably the best podcast episode we recorded, and it messed up too. And then we finally got the third try, but this is the first try for this episode, and hopefully the only try. Fingers crossed. But anyways, I didn't even finish my intro.
Well, hold on, stop. Shut your mouth.
Okay. And this is where we talk about Reformed writing, podcasting, culture, and crippling depression.
There you go. That should be the new tagline for the early. I was going to say that we can brag about the lost episode as much as we want because no one will ever know.
No one will ever. It was the greatest episode of all time.
Yeah, we can just assume, and people, hopefully they trust us and they can.
Except for the fact that I think my favorite episode to ever record was with Laura Myers, like two episodes ago.
Yeah, that one was pretty good too.
That was a lot of fun. You listened to it?
What up? I did listen to it. Yeah.
That was fun. It was a really fun one.
That's just because Jason pays me to listen to him.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I also pay my mom to listen to him. She doesn't listen to him, but I pay her.
You said you had to up the pay a little bit.
Yeah. She's like, $300 an hour isn't enough. And I'm like, oh, okay. Because I just make bank off of this podcast, you know?
It's true.
Just like boku dollars. That's how you say it. Boku. Okay, anyways.
Is that a real term?
Boku. It looks like it's BEAUCOUP.
Is that like Roku?
No, it's not like Roku because Roku is the worst. I have one.
I've got one too. I actually don't really use it.
I just ordered the Chromecast on Black Friday, so it'll be here. I will say, I
got a Chromecast and it overtook the Roku for me. I don't really use the Roku much at all anymore.
Yeah. Boku is, it's an informal adjective, and it means many or much. And the example that Google uses via somebody's dictionary, I'm not quite sure, boku profits. Boku profits are at stake.
There you go.
What they mean is money, and they mean stake as in like there's a risk, but you could also interpret that to be boku profits, like God's profits in the Old Testament. Boku profits are at the stake. So they're about to be killed. So many prophets are about to be killed.
Yeah. That's why you make the big bucks, is because of how you just transition that right.
How is that for homonyms?
That was beautiful. that was a work of literary art.
Thank you. I was kind of sort of an English major for a small amount of time. So Still waiting to finish that bachelor degree somewhere. Anyways, today we have on David Appelt, however the cuss you say it.
It's Appelt.
Appelt. That's really just stupid, saying. By the way. Like, the way you pronounce it is really stupid. Anyways, we're on to talk about...
I didn't come up with it, so...
Yeah, well, really you can repronounce it, you know? Like...
Yeah, that's true.
You can change it. Like, my last name is Henricks. I could just change it to... Heinrich's if I wanted to, like, no one will know, because I call myself whatever the crap I want. Okay,
well, the first time I saw your name, I thought it was Heinrich because there's a famous basketball player named Kirk Heinrich.
I know.
I was sad that you're not him.
Yeah, I'm not him.
It would somebody, be cooler to be friends with him,
but... maybe Jimi Hendrix, that was but he died, you know, drugs. Yeah. Anyways, we're going to be talking about depression and anxiety today.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a real uplifting episode, lots of comedy. I would say that...
There'll probably be some inappropriate comedy.
No, I can't put that out on the air.
Not in terms of, like, bad content, but in terms of, like, making jokes about sad topics.
Oh yeah, absolutely, because that's how we deal with
exactly
hard things. And also, I wasn't like front loading us with comedy on purpose. I'm just like the funniest dude you know, and it was kind of just like came out, you know, just naturally.
Comedy just happens when Jason and I walk into the room.
What's up? I think the Village Church water slides was a pretty great episode.
It was.
I don't even remember anything about it, but I remember that people, like, it was one of our most downloaded episodes that didn't have, like, a really, really famous guest or something.
That's what I go for, is success for non-famous people.
What up? That, like, Stephen Outrogi controls that category, you know?
It's true.
Success, yeah. But not famous? Anyways. I hope he listens.
We should make a list of everyone that we, like... sort of make fun of or reference during this episode.
Well, Stephen Outrogi, we've had him on the podcast, so I'll just send it over and like, hey, we made fun of you on this one, and he'll be like, oh, I'll listen. He'll never listen.
He has to listen to it because I've got some writing on his website. So
that's true. I heard that.
Yeah,
that's true. I heard that.
Yeah,
people don't get that reference, but we do. That's all that matters.
I've heard that.
That's true. I heard that. All right, so.
Crippling depression.
Yeah, crippling depression. Okay, so David, you tell me, let's just jump straight in. You tell me what you struggle with.
Well, let's see. I guess the reason that I did want to talk about it is because I've dealt with different portions of my life, different, kind of different things, all in the category of depression and anxiety and different levels of that, varying levels of that, in different parts of my life. And, I didn't really realize that until probably maybe a senior in high school was the first time that somebody told me that, hey, I think you struggle with this, which was kind of a shock to me because I always thought I was like a happy person. But then, somebody like had told me like, hey, remember last year, like you seemed not the same. And, thinking back on it, that was probably the first time that I went through it in the winter. And then just through different instances in my life where I've developed, anxiety and some post-traumatic stress kind of stuff, that's made it deal. And I'll say that I deal much more with the anxiety side of things. I've never had to deal with it to the point of medication or anything like that. I've got friends that have. But that's been most of my experience with it probably since I was maybe like in high school is when I started to have these things kind of happen. And then definitely through college age and then after college, it definitely became a part of my life that I had to get help with, and I had to like actually deal with for the first time, I guess.
So you got two anxious people sitting on both sides of this mic right now, because that's what I have struggled with. And a few episodes back, I think I don't remember what episode it was, but I remember I talked about it basically the first time publicly. over the air, and I don't know how many people, you know, listened to it, and I didn't get any emails about it. So apparently I wasn't apparently I wasn't inspiring enough or anything. But anyways, my anxiety has always been something that was kind of sort of semi diagnosed as severe situational anxiety. And so it's not that I'm constantly anxious or I get anxious at things that, quote unquote, you shouldn't get anxious at. It's mostly things that usually make people stressed and anxious, are exponential for someone like me. So let's say that I failed a test. I failed a test, in physics. And don't worry, I actually did that. I
didn't make it up. We're totally honest.
I'm actually
here.
You know, honesty moment right here. I'm actually failing all of my classes this semester. So there's that. I've never gotten below a B plus in a class. And here's a pointer, guys. Do not work full time and do an engineering discipline full time. Stupid idea.
Yeah, it's tough.
So I'm gonna have to figure out how to what to do next instead of that. Cause there's, I'm not quitting my job. I gotta, you know, eat. but
that's important.
Yeah. That, whatever that idea is, you know, I could just go on welfare. You know, I could do that. No. So let's say I failed my physics test, which I did. Instead of just making me kind of stressed and being kind of bummed and, you know, the normal things like, what am I going to do next type of thing? I get an anxiety attack. And this one, usually they're delayed, and it's usually when I think upon things, not right when they happen. So I was at my house later that night, and I just felt this swelling up in my chest, and I wasn't quite sure what it was, because I had only had two anxiety attacks before, and they were kind of different. But this time, I just felt this overwhelming amount of physical tension in my chest, and then it felt like someone was stabbing me from the inside out in the chest, just like one long stab, and I just I couldn't breathe, and I was almost still staring at my ceiling for 3 hours and on the inside screaming, and it was absolutely awful.
It's not fun.
Yeah, and that happened between the episode that I talked about it on and now, so that's why nobody's heard about it until now. But anyways, so that's an example of what the severe situational anxiety looks like. And I have gone to a psychiatrist and a psychologist and a counselor, all in biblical disciplines, and they have all said that I don't need to be medicated, just because that's, you know, the way it works with me. But man, it's tough. And my mom, I grew up my entire life with my mom having anxiety. And you know, hers is just severe anxiety across the board. And there were times when she was on her medication, there were times when she wasn't on her medication. And when she was on her medication, if you know, it was my mom. You know, I felt like she was my mom. And when she wasn't on her medication, then she was always bitter. She was always angry at me, always yelling at me. And unfortunately, she hasn't taken her anxiety medication in years at this point. So that's really tough. And then my stepdad's bipolar and has anxiety, but he keeps on his medication. But, you know, that's a little bit of my background and where I'm coming from. So I have no experience with the depression part. I have never experienced depression in terms of clinical depression. Everyone obviously at some point has some kind of spiritual or emotional depression. But in terms of clinical depression, I've never experienced that. So I can't really speak to that, but hopefully you can. What is that like?
Yeah. The difference between it is with anxiety, you have obviously you have the problem of being to your body, your mind telling you to basically freak out and to worry and to have your adrenaline going all the time. And at least my experience with depression, which is something that I pretty much have to keep in my mind every winter as it comes around, which is why it's good that we're recording this now, because even though Christmas is coming up, like the reality is that there's a lot of people that every time the winter comes around, especially, you know, maybe you don't deal with it in Texas a lot, but if you're up north where I am and stuff, the winter sadness in the winter, you know, not as much daylight, all those things. That really makes it difficult for a lot of people. And so with depression, I would just say this, the simplest way for me to communicate it to people is not necessarily that you feel sad. It's not often that you go through every day thinking how bad things are and how sad you are. It's much more that you tend to just stop enjoying things and you tend to stop having motivation for things. Mm-hmm. So where all of a sudden getting out of bed isn't necessarily, you know, people who are depressed, they deal with this thing about, you know, it's hard to get out of bed in the morning. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily because, oh, I'm afraid of what's going to happen or because everything is horrible.
Yeah.
It's just like a feeling, or really a lack of feeling, a numbness of no motivation, no drive to get up. The drive that used to be there in you is kind of sucked up. And I don't know, in my experience with depression, it really just feels like an exhaustion of sorts.
Yeah.
Where you just feel kind of wrung out and kind of not yourself.
Yeah.
And it definitely happens. And it definitely can happen a lot during the wintertime. So I hope, and I hope people are listening to it and they have experienced that phenomenon in their life where they've noticed that during the darker months. Mm-hmm. Then hopefully something you say is kind of helpful to that. But I think the reality, like you said, is that almost everybody is going to deal with depression at some level in their life, whether it's situational or it's more pervasive to their whole life.
Yeah, I remember the first time that I had an anxiety attack, that was a good way of explaining depression, because my mom also has struggled with depression all of my life, mostly anxiety, but a little bit with depression. And that was a really good way to put it. There's just like no motivation to do things. It's not that you're, it's not that you are scared or afraid. It's more that there's no motivation to do these things.
Yeah.
And I remember experiencing that a lot when I grew up, and then grow up in a Christian household. So there was nothing, you know, one to lean on. There was no greater purpose in that kind of suffering. There was no point to the gospel. So that had to kind of be cultivated in me over a lot of time through my early Christian years to now. And I'm still trying to figure it out, man. Like, what does it look like? What does it look like to love Christ in that moment? What does it look like to get my eyes off of myself and look up to him? Because it's not just some kind of, it's not just a lack of trust in God, because there are times when anxiety and depression comes from a lack of trust in God, but there are other times when it's actual chemical imbalance in your brain telling you to do things that you don't want to feel, you know?
Well, and there's so many causes for it, and Christians get it wrong a lot by talking about you must just, you know, struggle with faith, or you must struggle with joy, and that's why you're dealing with this. The reality is that it can be caused by spiritual things.
Yeah.
It can be caused by physical things, like you talked about with chemicals in your brain, but it can also be real just mental causes where, like for someone like me, where a significant portion of mine comes from post-traumatic stress type of situations, it's not necessarily a physical thing. Like, you can't look in my brain and see certain chemicals for that. But it is modes of, it's habits of thought that my body developed in response to a situation. So even though it's not physical, it's also not necessarily spiritual, purely spiritual, I would say.
Yeah.
But the Christian can get it wrong a lot, because we can talk about things only spiritually and ignore the physical realities. And then the world gets it wrong all the time, because they often don't even have a spiritual realm to even talk about.
Yeah.
So they just don't really have much help at all in the situation.
It's almost as if you can't just separate the mind and spirit from the body. It's weird.
It's almost like God made us, you know,
one whole being. It's weird. Yeah,
exactly.
Really crazy how that works. So you mentioned something a little bit about getting less daylight, and that's actually something that I've heard before, but we're going to actually have to talk about that when we get back from the break. So just a minute, guys, take a listen to our sponsors.
This episode of The Collective Cast is sponsored by 110 Marketing. 110 Marketing specializes in social media management and advertising, web design, and email marketing. Adam and Dustin can help you and your business improve your reach via Facebook ads, online reviews, and even podcast help. Go to 110marketing.com for your personal and business marketing needs. That's 110marketing.com.
Welcome back to The Collective Cast, the podcast where Josh and Jason, except for Josh isn't here this week, talk about smart stuff sometimes. That's what this podcast is about.
We talk about smart topics without the requisite intelligence.
Exactly. That is very, very accurate.
Yeah.
Very accurate. We don't have the requisite intelligence, but we do say smart stuff sometimes. Josh isn't here this week. He's actually too depressed to come in. So, see, you said that we would have one of those inappropriate jokes, and I had to get it out of the way. You know, humor is how we cope.
Actually, I was not too long ago, I was talking with a Christian psychiatrist / psychologist in both disciplines. And he was giving a bit of a seminar about church leadership and mental health and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept on making these jokes that were kind of on the verge of like inappropriate like that, like laughing at depression, laughing about that. And he just goes, "Guys, I'm really sorry. If you haven't met many counselors, we tend to develop a dark sense of humor to deal with the things that we talk about."
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's totally appropriate.
Yeah, man. It's kind of like just how cops make jokes about murder all the time. I mean, that's just absolutely. Like they see it so much, and it's just some kind of
defense you have to, the word medicate yourself. I mean, like that sounds bad, but you kind of have to
do drugs, kids.
It becomes normal to you. You get used to it, you know.
You heard it here first on the Collective Cast. David Appelt wants you to do drugs, kids. Medicate yourself. Go find some Oxycontin. No, that's another one.
Don't do that.
There we go. Yeah, don't do that, kids. Wow. Okay. All right, let's move on from that. So before the break, I left us out on a little teaser. You know, a little teaser.
That's a radio term.
It's a radio term. I got it from Kid Craddock in the morning. No, not really. Okay, so David, tell me a little bit about what you were talking about with like in the wintertime. Why does it matter that it's wintertime to you?
Well, this might be a phenomenon that Southerners don't quite grasp as much.
No, we do. It gets cold in North Texas. Shut your mouth.
Okay.
Go on.
It gets cold. And obviously it doesn't only get cold. It's also only light for, 8 hours a day pretty much. And even the light that you get during that time period is not as strong as like the summertime. And I'm not a scientist, you know, it's a shock to everybody. I'm not, but, basically your body has a natural response to sunlight, creates a kind of vitamin D in your blood and all that. And basically having that sunlight is emotionally good for human beings. So during the winter, whenever you're faced with, especially if you work indoors, so you're just not outside in the sun as much and you're dealing with the cold and you're dealing with being shut up as much, it's really easy for people to go through. The term is a seasonal affective disorder, where the winter months, the darkness, the coldness, all that stuff tends to make people feel depressed during the winter time. And I don't know anything really scientific about it beyond that, but it is something that I think a fair amount of people in the country deal with, and I know that I've dealt with it certainly at times. Those are, I would say, definitely the times of my life when I have to fight anxiety and depression more are during the winter, for sure.
Yeah, I'll have to think a little bit about that, because there may have been times, you know, when I struggle with anxiety more that they were during those months. I don't know. I've always thought of myself as somebody who loved winter, but and that still can be the case, you know.
Yeah,
they don't have to be antithetical, you know.
Yeah, I have a combination of battling that during the winter, but also like loving Christmas a lot and celebrating it. So.
Wait, hold on, no! You can't love Christmas. We're reformed, remember?
I know.
Yeah, no,
I can't have any fun.
Love Christmas. Like we go through Advent at the village, and this year let all the super reformed, truly reformed people gasp. We're actually going through the whole church calendar this year. We're going through Epiphany and Lent and Holy Week.
I'm just waiting for
Easter
more pulpit and ten articles to come out, for the fact polemics
that
report.
Even the way that we're following the church calendar as Baptist, because we're starting Advent a week late and we're like shortening Lent, and like it's just like we're not listening to the church calendar because it doesn't bind us.
All that still being equal, you're still going to get a nasty article from J.D. Hall.
Oh, of course. I've already gotten the two ones about Matt in the past 6 months, and then he made a Facebook post about me. Do you remember seeing that?
Oh, that was funny.
That was great. And then in a private message, he kind of sort of apologized, and said that it was actually a really good episode because we had really intelligent questions for Dr. Jim Renahan.
There you go.
And let's just say I told Jim Renahan about the whole situation and it was a little interesting. So,
yeah.
Anyways, back on topic. And you know, we don't need to listen about J.D. Hall. That'll make me depressed. There we go. Another one of those.
We're back into it.
Well, look at that. I made the transition though with one of those jokes, you know, J.D. Hall makes me depressed, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. Anyways. So what would you suggest somebody who is struggling with depression or anxiety, in a clinical sense do?
I think the first thing that to back the question up one step is that
you just defied me. You said you got to back it up one step. Okay, all right, go on. That's fine. Go on.
Yeah. But if somebody is a Christian and they have thought about this potentially, like think that this is a part of their life, the first thing they need to do is like realize that they can still be a Christian with it. And it is something that, you know, not only do we see in the Bible with different biblical people, you know, even Christians through the centuries, you know, I've written about it. I mean, Charles Spurgeon wrote about it all the time. And the reality is that you can still be a Christian while you're dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're dealing with it in a severe way, I have some ideas that I think that helped me in a non-clinical sense.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're dealing with it in a severe way, the number one thing I would say to do would be to go and find a Christian counselor who has good, like a Christian counselor that hopefully you can get personal recommendation on from people that you trust.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that's a counselor. Like I was blessed to have one that, several people I knew went to and had great biblical Christian experience, you know, like
mm-hmm.
he was recommended and I knew about him. I knew some of his bio. I knew that he had studied at RTS and stuff. So like he is a, you know, I knew all these things about him going in, which made me feel confident and like, okay, he can help. Yeah. And I would recommend that anybody's dealing with something like that, find out a real genuine Christian counselor that's trained to help in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. So because, go on. Sorry.
I was just going to say, and then just go do it. Like, it's really easy to mm-hmm. talk yourself out of doing it, but
just go ahead and do
even
it.
Even if it's only a couple times, to see if it even is going to help. Just go and try it.
Yeah, I got you, man. I went to a couple counseling sessions at Oklahoma State. When I was at Oklahoma State, they were actually free, and it wasn't biblical counselor or anything, but it was just incredibly useful because even though they couldn't give me the spiritual aspect of it, they just gave me tangible ways to deal with my anxiety mm-hmm. when the time comes. And of course, I've been able to since then talk with a biblical counselor and say like, hey, this is what my non-biblical counselor told me about this. And, you know, my biblical counselor was like, yeah, like these are great things. Let's mm-hmm. actually like look at it from a biblical perspective and see where that may fall short or things like that. So definitely go to a Christian counselor.
I should say the other thing you should do, maybe it's a step before getting a counselor. I would go out and buy a book on Amazon.
What book?
It's called Christians Get Depressed Too. And it's by David Murray.
David Murray. Why does that sound familiar?
He is, the way that I found out about him, he's an author that's written a few things. He's a professor at Puritan Theological Seminary.
Okay.
The way that I found out about him, I think, was through Joe Thorne, I believe. Because I believe that Joe, he was somebody that Joe, and I'm not spilling any beans on Joe because he's talked about this a million times, but
yeah.
But he was somebody that Joe talked to deal with Joe's anxiety and stuff like that. So through that, I heard about the book title. I picked up the book. It's like less than 100 pages, and it's a really good primer on what depression and anxiety is. It's a really good primer on how to start dealing with it.
Yeah.
And it's really good. It's also good for people who have people who deal with it in their life.
And if your spouse deals with it,
or if your friend deals with it, if your kid deals with it or whoever, mm-hmm. pick it up and you'll learn tons, and it's really easy to read. And that might be something that if you read that, you might come away from that saying, oh, I actually know how to solve this.
Yeah.
Or you might come away from that saying, oh, I should go to a counselor, which is a totally valid thing to do. So.
Yeah, that's wow. I'm really glad that resource is out there. Super short resource. I actually pulled it up on heritagebooks.org. I mean, if he's a professor at Puritan Reform Seminary.
Oh, he's super. Yeah.
You know, I don't doubt anything that comes out of him. Maybe except for something about baptism.
I think he's professor of Old Testament at Puritan, actually.
Oh, see, he needs to look at the New Testament and become a Baptist. Yeah. You know,
like exactly. It is theologically solid. I've read probably in the last 2 years, I probably read 3 or 4 books on the subject.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably the best one I read in terms of quality and speed of reading at the same time.
Yeah, because 112 pages is not that bad. You know, you could get that done. You read, you read 10 pages a day.
I think the first time I read it, I read it in about 2 sittings.
Yeah.
It's definitely well worth the price for sure. So
yeah. Another book that I would recommend, or actually I'll get onto that second. This book right here by David Murray on Heritage Books actually has an audiobook version as well. And I know that a lot of people that I've talked to who struggle with depression, depression is very much a thing in the morning for them.
Yeah.
Before anything really gets started. And if that means that you listen to it first thing when you get up in the morning or on your way to work. I know that I do a lot of my listening, you know, my scripture reading, not physically, but audibly. Yeah, I don't look at my Bible when I'm driving, but I'll listen.
That's a good idea.
Good old Streetlights Bible. Great.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's available in audiobook version and ebook version, and it's $6.50. It's worth it. And honestly, you can go halvesies with a friend and you guys could – share the book.
If the $6.50 is too much, if the $6.50 is
$3.25, you know, and it's on Amazon as well. I'm guessing it's like $10 on Amazon, but you know, why not?
Yeah, actually buy it from it's a cheap book. It's a short read, which is good if you are dealing with depression. You know, the last thing you want to do is read a textbook. So,
yeah, and that's
something that short is pretty good.
Did Piper write a book on depression as well?
He did. I read his. It's also pretty good, and it's also very short.
Okay,
but he doesn't have. He doesn't have the clinical training that Murray.
Gotcha.
Whenever Murray read the book, he actually went. He's not clinically trained, but he went to clinically trained Christian counselors get information for it. And Piper's is much more. It's practical, but it's also much more on the spiritual side of things, as you might expect with Piper.
Yeah. So, let's see. Another book that I would look at, maybe on the less clinical side, but from somebody who has experienced depression, is somebody that you mentioned, and it was Joe Thorne, Note to Self by Joe Thorne.
Yeah.
And he said that what really spurred him to write this book, was he was in a time where he wasn't preaching the gospel to himself. He was in such a slump in terms of depression that the gospel was something he said, but not something the gospel wasn't something that he felt, as something that he experienced.
Yeah. And even more, read his book, Experiencing the Trinity.
Oh, absolutely. That book.
That one will, both of those together will definitely help in the spiritual and mental sides of things. For sure. I've read both of those in the last few years, and they're both really good work. So I would recommend those really highly as well.
Experiencing the Trinity on available through Crossway Publishers, I believe.
Yeah, that's probably, I think that is still the best devotional style book that I've ever read, I think.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And again, it's short.
It is. The, Joe Thorne doesn't have much to say. So, no, you know, that's if you listen to Doctrine.
He just doesn't have much of consequence to say.
No. That's true. he doesn't have the requisite to say something, right? He just does.
He doesn't have the requisite intelligence.
That's why he has to sit down with Jimmy Fofo and just like ramble for.
We all know that Jimmy's the brain power there.
Yeah, definitely. Seriously, my favorite podcast is definitely Doctrine and Devotion. It is not the Collective Cast.
That can't be true about Jimmy though, because he's got the beard and the hair, so he's obviously. He's compensating for the brain power with
that's
the
looks. That's true. That's true. Well, Joe has the beard, but it's compensating for the hair.
He's compensating with the tattoos, though. Come on.
Oh, that's true. Keep up. That's true. Joe's,
the tattoos compensate for the beard, which compensates for the hair, which, you know, it's just, it's a vicious cycle that those guys are in, and we pray for them.
Yeah. We're going to have to, because it's just like a, it gets me depressed just thinking about it, right? It
gets me sad just thinking about it.
Yeah. And I'm going to use the word depressed just so we know that. we're bringing it back to the topic.
The topic.
And we're bringing back the inappropriateness of joking about something that's very serious. Yeah.
I would say I guess I had a bad answer, though, because now that I'm thinking about the question that you asked, I have more answers.
Okay, give me more answers then. Come on.
So the answers of what are the first things you should do if you're like, hey, I think this is a problem that I have. The other first thing, we're on like the three first things now.
What up?
But one of the first things,
go to your elders,
would be to just immediately tell somebody about it.
Yeah.
I would like immediately tell somebody about it. I think that one of the things that changed, I've dealt with seasons of depression in my past. I got out of on my own, so to speak, but in more serious times of it, like even this last year, I dealt with it a lot. Mm-hmm. And what changed things immediately was just talking to people about it that I could trust, and just even just to tell them, hey, this is a battle that I have. Even if they just looked at me and said, well, I don't know what to tell you, it still felt better that they at least, you know, like they at least said, I'll pray for you and I'm with you. And, you know, like, and one of the first things that depression and anxiety will do is isolate you, and mm-hmm. it'll tell you to cut people out of your life because they won't understand you, or they're going to leave you, or it won't help.
Yeah.
The best way to fight that is to just tell somebody about it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you can't really trick yourself into the idea that no one cares and no one wants to help when you've talked to somebody and literally all they're trying to do is help, you know?
Well, if they're willing to, like, text you about it on a Tuesday morning and just say, hey, you know, I thought of you today.
Yeah.
And if somebody tells you that they're dealing with it, don't get overwhelmed with trying to think of the perfect things to say back to them.
Definitely.
Definitely just start with that stinks.
That's a great way. Like, that's the worst. Yeah.
Which is like the same thing you should say to anyone who's really facing any kind of grief, by the way. Just start with that. That's generally the best place to start.
Like, oh, they're in a better place. No, like this sucks. No, like
that stinks.
This isn't the way it's supposed to be, you know?
Yeah. And so I think to do that first is really powerful.
Yeah,
and it'll make you feel different.
And it's the same thing with women as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like when women tell you their problems, they don't want you to fix it, right? They want you to just say like, "Hey, that sucks."
Generally, they do not want fixing.
Yeah.
Generally, most people don't want fixing. Though.
Yeah, generally, and I just most say women because this was a Dave Chappelle skit at one
that's
point.
The thing. Yeah, that's the Chappelle thing. But it's true that that's where we should start, is telling somebody about it.
Absolutely.
You know, obviously try to make it somebody who is a believer and can
hopefully and spiritually mature.
And mature enough to not give you horrible answers or to guilt you about it.
Yes, because that's actually a thing that I've noticed a few times is you know, well-intentioned people will be like, well, you just need to believe more and you need to trust God more and things like that. And all you're doing is guilting the person, because I can guarantee you that if it's a believer, struggling with anxiety or depression, which again, we're putting them into the same category just in terms of time and everything, but they're incredibly different. But
they're different, but they have the same seeds.
They have the same seeds cases. And in a lot of ways.
Which is why clinically they're often treated similarly.
Yeah, and also there's a lot of first steps that are in common. But anyways, they already have in their mind this idea that they already feel guilty about it. You know, they already feel like, you know, why do I feel this way? Why do I, you know, why do I not trust God the way I should, kind of thing. You're not telling them anything new when you're saying you should trust God more. It's like, yes, I know. Now tell me what I do, you know? And you don't want the inexperienced person telling what to do. You need the Christian counselor saying like, hey, this is what's going on. This is how we deal with it. And this is not how we like try to get it out of our life, but like when it's there in the moment, what does it look like?
The time to correct somebody dealing with it is, I would say my experience in dealing with friends who have it, the times that I've had to actually like step into somebody and say like, hey, you're actually in what I would consider like you're in sin, like you are mistaken.
Yeah.
Is whenever you see the person identifying themselves and giving themselves over to it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Which is very different from struggling against it, wanting to be free from it and fighting it. And it looks very different. I have a friend who has medication for his anxiety and is a great brother in Christ, and it's a significant part of his life in that, you know, obviously if you're on medication for something, it's part of your life, but it's not his identity. And it's not something that he excuses mistakes by just saying, oh, it's because I have anxiety. I have another friend that deals with depression and also on medication, but they are very prone to just never taking correction, and they're prone to acting out,
making an excuse,
and using it as an excuse.
Yeah,
of, you know, I'm sorry I did that, but I'm depressed. Or and whenever you're thinking like that, then you do actually have a bit of a sin problem. That doesn't mean the totality of your problem is sin. That doesn't, like, I'm not saying, oh, if you ever sin, then and you're depressed, then it's always your fault. But that decision that we make to like idolize it and make it our identity is not healthy. And that is something that people need to be saved from and pulled out of. But it's definitely not, most of the time you're not dealing with that.
Yeah.
Most of the time you're just dealing with somebody struggling.
Especially if someone's coming to you about it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Especially in that instance. And something else I'd like to recommend to people is, if you don't know where to go, if you don't know the people to go to, if you don't know a good biblical counselor, crazy idea, go to your elders. They're not going to be able to give you that Christian counseling. They're going to be able to probably. I mean, they might, one of them might be a Christian counselor. And if that's the case, then you fit the jackpot. But even they can give you a little bit of spiritual guidance, and they can say, hey, this is who we want to direct you to. These are the people that you can talk to, the people that we know that also struggle with this. Here's the biblical counselors that deal with these kind of things. And it's as if the elders of a church are there to serve you and help you in your walk. Man, it's crazy how that works, right?
Yeah.
So anyways, in terms of totality of what you need to do, if you are struggling with this, talk to somebody.
Talk to somebody, check out those resources that we talked about, the books,
which will be in the show notes.
Explore the idea of going to a counselor. Talking to somebody, like we talked about this time of year, it's probably really hard to talk to somebody this time of year because you feel like you're not allowed to be sad around Christmas time. And that guilt will just make the depression worse. But have the courage to overcome that and just admit to somebody that it's going on. And then there's also things that I found, even in the last year, are incredibly helpful for, they're incredibly practical things too, And they will help. They might not, like, if you're really suffering with severe anxiety or depression, they won't change that completely. Mm-hmm. But they will definitely help with things like seasonal affective disorder or just seasons of life where you're feeling that anxiety and stuff. And a lot of those are laid out in that book that David Murray wrote. But one of them, the biggest one that I've found, is to go back to enjoying things. One of the things I realized in myself was just kind of like some gifts that, you know, the gifts that God gives that I just kind of, like, because of depression stuff, stopped enjoying.
Yeah.
For me, it was things like listening to music, and it was even things like sports and reading, like, for fun, instead of reading just, oh, I want to study more and I want to learn more, but just reading for fun, and like exercising and stuff. Mm-hmm. Going back to those things change things, because we are body and soul. And, you know, you look at things like exercise, and just doing good exercise, healthy exercise, will absolutely change your mental state over time. So things like that can even be done in a very practical way. Yeah. If you're dealing with it now.
All right, guys. And last thing before I close us out for this episode, pray. Crazy mm-hmm. idea. Our Lord is not just a Lord over seasonal depression or sadness or the mild anxiety, but he's Lord over everything. You know, he's Lord over severe anxiety and severe depression.
Yeah,
that falls in the everything category. Mm-hmm. And yes, you do need to get tangible help, but the Lord is where help comes from, and he uses means. But if you don't cry out to the Lord in your time of need, then you will find something to be severely lacking. And if you want to know mm-hmm. a little bit more about what it means to pray, we will also have in the show notes a link to our episode on prayer and what that looks like. And also, Joe Thorne, man, we're going to mention him again. He has a great guide to go through the Valley of Vision. And those Puritans got depressed too. There's some great things about what it's like to be in the dark night of the soul, yeah. as the psalmist says.
I would say read through the book of Psalms and pray through the book of Psalms.
Definitely.
And you'll see plenty of depression and sadness in there.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed anything we talked about, or even just put up with us, especially David, oh my gosh, that guy's the worst. Head over to reformedcollective.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/reformedcollective. Share our social media posts. There's this guy named David Appelt that actually makes most of them, the vast majority of them. He works hard in them, and they are really, really good.
And it hurts my feelings when you don't share them.
And it hurts his feelings. Like, he gets depressed when you do, when you don't share them. I can pull it all back into the show. I promise. But anyways, guys, definitely share those things, because sometimes we have good quotes. We got a good one coming up for December, right? Although by the time people, I just gave up. I just gave away when we were recording this.
It's basically December when we're recording this.
Yeah, basically, but
basically December.
This is gonna be like the second week of December when this comes out. Maybe like the third. Yeah. But anyways,
it's about as much December as paedobaptism is a biblical position.
So it's not December. Yeah! Gonna throw in a little baptism joke right in there. Anyways, and also find us on Twitter at RefCollect. That's R-E-F-C-O-L-L-E-C-T. All right, tell your friends about the show if you enjoyed it, and if you hated it, tell your friends anyway. Again, you might have Lutheran or Presbyterian friends, and they might like the things you hate and hate the things you love. So there's that. Look us up on iTunes and give us a 5-star review. David gave us one. Give us a good one.
I did?
Yes,
that
you
must
did.
Have been a mistake.
Stop. Get out of here. All right. And also support us on Patreon. We're going to patreon.com/collectivecast. Pay the bills. I'd like to eventually pay my editors for all the ridiculous amount of work they do.
Reading the garbage that I put in front of them.
Reading the garbage that David puts on front of them. And doesn't get near... I can't imagine what gets put out on the Blazing Center, because it doesn't get edited nearly as much.
No, it doesn't.
As the Reform Collective. Because we have a... we have some pretty baller editors.
That's true.
I hope to have on Taylor sometimes, or sometime our head editor.
That's dangerous. That's dangerous.
To talk about excellency in Christian circles. But anyways, thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next time, except for David. We're getting rid of him. Bye.